You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys.
Over here, on my right, the one and only Bobby Somerville.
Hello, Michael.
Bobby, welcome back.
Thanks, Bobby. It's lovely to be back. It really is.
And next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
Scott, Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. I've been back for a while, too, haven't I?
Yes. Yes. And then across the table, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Andrew, welcome back. Jesus Sheps.
I had to take some time off to grow my beard.
Good to see you, Andrew. Man, I think I'm going to cry, guys. This is just
don't cry.
It's a reunion tour.
It's not that good. It's not worth crying.
You know what? Andrew's back.
Yeah. Wow. Welcome back.
And next to me on my left, we've got the one and only Rob Arbiter.
Hello there, Mike. I shouldn't have shown up today because everybody has been away for all this time.
Now, have I missed you missing a podcast?
No, I have yet to miss a podcast.
So you haven't missed anything?
I missed nothing.
So you're 90 shows old.
90 shows. He is 90 for 90. Wow. He is the Cal Ripken of the podcast world.
Wow. Which puts me only one ahead of Mike. He only missed one.
Maybe you should just call it the Robcast.
No, I don't think so. Because then I can't miss it. This way I can still miss it. Yeah, something comes up.
He has them banked up. But don't miss any.
I won't. I don't plan to.
Well, anyhow, welcome back, guys. It's great.
Nice to be back.
Show number 90. Can you believe that?
I cannot.
I mean, I was just happy to get like 10 shows out of this
thing. The
question
is, how many years have we been doing it? That's really.
Oh, you don't want to know because you won't show up next time. We're going to be.
I had more hair when I started this.
We're going to finish our fourth year going on our fifth year.
Wow.
No, wait. We started in 2006, actually. So I take that back. We're closing out our fifth year.
Pretty scary.
No, guys, you've been awesome the whole time. I've loved every show. How's that? Pulling that out.
Perfect. Right on.
Hey, anyhow, I wanted to really quick, right off the bat, have you noticed that we have a new little theme up front?
Yes, we do.
What do you guys think? It's kind of cool.
Cool. Caught me by surprise.
That was done by my good friend Mark Stitz. He is also the one who has Play Guitar Like Magic. And it's just going to kick off. We're going to be accepting submissions of new theme songs for the podcast.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you can do anything you want, providing you use the same chord progression that we've always used, which is C sharp, B,
E. C sharp?
Yeah.
So the guitar players are out.
Yeah. Out of all the keys, I don't know, C sharp.
You know what? It's the only chords I knew at the time.
All the black keys.
Hey. So C sharp, B, E, and F sharp.
I got a feeling that if they couldn't work out the chords in that song, they maybe shouldn't be submitting a new one.
There you go. We're good. But for some consistency and stuff. But there's a lot of great composers and there's a lot of good musicians that we have out there that are listening to us. And so I figured, what the heck? Let's just see what's
a great idea.
See what they can do.
Why not?
And we'll play it and we'll give you credit and we'll keep all the royalties when we sell it. Just like the music biz.
Right.
Anyway, let's just start. Joining us today, we are honored and privileged to have the one and only Andy Jackson.
Yay! Thank you for having me, guys.
Andy Jackson.
She sounds so familiar.
Yes.
Why is that, Mike?
I keep hearing her voice in my head.
Go on, just say, you're listening to.
Go ahead.
You're listening to all the best guys in the world. Audio Nowcast.
She knows how to play.
Sweet. I give her another 20.
Andy Jackson is the voice of the Audio Nowcast. She does all our tags and is really great, and anytime I need a change, she just does it and doesn't charge us a dang thing.
That's right, and I have a tune within hours by the end of the workday.
And next to her is her husband, Mike Stitz. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
And Mike's working on some really cool projects right now. He's actually mixing the new Arms of the Sun album for Rex, who used to play in the band Pantera. This is kind of his new musical project. So we're going to be talking about mixing and things like that on the second half. So, Mike, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here.
But I wanted to start off really quick. How many of you guys, have you ever been to a radio station? Anybody ever seen a real live radio station, control room, or anything like that?
Yes.
I did for the first time this past summer. I went to visit Andy. And let me tell you, radio, that's a high-pressure gig, boy. Because when you're dealing with not only having to – she does phone calls on her radio program, but take calls.
Wait,
and things
wait,
like
live,
that.
Not recorded and edited?
No, they're recorded and edited. But they do that in between, like, all the commercials and stuff. What's the name of the
automation? Yeah, Scott system.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. Scott system where it lines it up and it has all that. She's editing, taking calls, and then feeding it, right? You feed it into
mm-hmm.
the system
sure. mm-hmm.
all at the same time. And then – not only that, but in between the songs, she can take control and do like a manual crossfade, right?
Yes,
between
you
the
can
songs?
On this particular software, Scott Studios. I don't know if you've heard of that, but Scott Studios is a touchscreen where it's you can put in auto or manual, and then the computer just controls it. So if I need to crossfade and things, I can just touch it with my hand on the screen.
I mean, that's like, talk about yeah. pressure. I mean, I still yeah. want to just.
And in between the calls, she's calling me and telling me how much she loved me.
Right.
So that
multitasker.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the automated computer. Part.
Yeah. 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 That's the computer calling.
Yeah. That's the recorded part oh. of the show.
Oh. Oh. Okay.
So it's actually texting, like, I love you, honey.
No, I just thought it was, I thought it was pretty amazing, though, that, I mean, you know, you think audio and live sounds that. High-pressure situation. Could you imagine knowing that there's a couple million people out there listening to you, and if you screw up any transition between the songs and stuff? And really, you have to do that, right? Because that's what right. keeps it – that's what keeps a tight playlist,
yes,
right?
Yes, I like to leave it manual myself because I manually have to press everything. You can put in auto, which they're doing voice tracking now in radio. It'll automatically – you record the breaks in 20 minutes, and it'll do a six-hour shift. But you can leave that in auto, but I personally like to leave mine in manual so I can hand touch everything, get the fades of the songs closer, tighter. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That human touch.
The human touch, that's right.
Unlike the days with carts. Remember the carts?
Yeah,
yes.
Remember the carts. Mm-hmm.
Big time.
Well, and it's so tight. And the other thing that was amazing is like you can't rehearse this stuff. It's all being done live, and the cues and the edits are so tight together. I mean, you're talking 10 seconds here, 5 seconds here, 30 seconds. It's just boom, boom, boom. And you listen to the radio, and it's so flawless and seamless. You never hear a glitch on the big stations. I don't know. You radio people are just – you're amazing. You know?
Multitaskers.
I screw up edits all the time in my mixes, so to be able to do that live was amazing. Anyhow, I just wanted to – we just wanted to point that out that you know, there's a whole nother level in the whole broadcast area that's just amazing and
not only the technical part, but communicating and connecting
well,
with
yeah,
the
that's
audience
true,
at
hard.
The same
that's the
time.
Hard part. Actually, that's even
right.
Now, do you still do mixing live? I mean, do they still do live board mixing as you're talking?
Some do. It depends on the station, but some do and some don't. Some of it's all automated. But on a show like mine, it's more talk, so I have to do it all live.
Wow.
I can move things around.
Kudos to you.
Thank you.
Anyhow, I just
it.
Wanted to thank you for joining us, Andy, and it's great to have you here, and we'll have you do tags when we're done
yes,
with this.
Yes, absolutely.
But let's just get right into it. Pro Tools, new hardware came out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with you, Andrew.
What? Yes.
Yes. Do you agree that new hardware came out?
Yes. Okay. I can confirm.
Now, have you?
I have not heard it. Oh. I've not heard it. I went to Village Studios a few weeks ago, and they had it there, racked up, but it wasn't hooked up. So it was. I mean,
sounded
I don't know if these are
though,
like pre-production. Yeah, very quiet. I mean, from everything I hear about what they did to make it, it should sound amazing. But I haven't heard it, so I don't know. I mean, what's really interesting to me though is, I mean, obviously the HDIO is great, replacing the 192, the high-end thing, getting balanced 16 in and out, analog in one box instead of unbalanced, things like that. But the smaller interface, is it the Omni, the HD Omni?
Yeah, the one that's more for like Project Studio.
Yeah, which has a built-in persistent mixer, so if it's not hooked up to the computer, like all of your routing is still there. You have live inputs being mixed to do headphone mixes live and very low latency monitoring and some onboard DSP. And it seems like it's pretty cool. If you're going to bring one interface to just set up anywhere, it seems like it's pretty cool, but I have not heard it. And I don't use Maddie, so the third one means
yeah.
nothing to me.
That's mainly for broadcasting, right?
We do Maddie.
No,
do
a lot
Maddie?
Of posts.
Oh,
because
it's,
Because it's, what, 96 channels on one
coax?
Yeah,
what we're doing is we have 500 inputs on our Euphonics console, and there's no way we're going to put 500 XLRs. So what we do is we do everything via MADI.
So why don't you explain what MADI is for the people that don't know what MADI is?
Listen, multi-channel analog, the digital interface. Multi-channel audio. Basically, it's a way to be able to move 64 channels at a time.
You can do 64 channels of 48K on a piece of coax cable, or you can do higher sample rates and lower number of tracks.
And we've been using a lot of the SSL boxes. They've made an interface that works just fine. But it's great to know that if you're going to use a real console and you want to be using, we have 6 Pro Tools systems,
right?
Upwards of 12 if we need it, and that all gets fed via MADI.
Are you guys looking at the HD MADI system that they?
No. Oh. It's one of those things. We already built it. It already works.
Right.
In the future, are we glad about MADI? Absolutely. So as we build a new room, instead of buying the SSL boxes, we haven't heard it yet and haven't played with it, but most likely that if DigiDesign has a MADI solution, then we're very much interested in it.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I was talking to some friends of mine who are Pro Tools editors and have their own Pro Tools system. Was it necessary for them to come out with this new hardware? What do you guys think? DigiDesign, their whole plan?
I think it was a good move. I think that not that there was anything wrong with the 192, but it's been out for quite a while, and there's newer converters and newer ways to do things, and so it's good that at the high end they came out with something. And it is nice to eliminate that whole confusion about 16 in, 8 out, or 8 in, 16 out, and all those questions. It's nice to have something that's just truly 16 in and out and that sounds as good as all the rest of the modern stuff that's coming out these days. I think the Omni interface is... It's not like anything that Digi ever had before,
right?
And it fills a need. And I'll tell you, I think the MADI is interesting for a lot of things other than what MADI's already being used for. Like in my studio, I have all the virtual instrument computers, and there are a lot of them feeding each other over ADAT, over Lightpipe, and that's fine, but it only goes up to 48K,
right?
And the connectors are flimsy, and you have all these optical cables all over the place, and they can break, and you can't kink them, and there's problems with them. The idea of being able to have more channels reliably on copper between all the virtual instrument machines to Pro Tools, which is my console, that's a really cool thing. It's not going to be cheap to switch over. I'm not going to do it right away. But MADI is really cool for going between virtual instruments and consoles in a music-only environment. So it's not just post.
I think they kind of – the 192 was middle of the ground. Everyone used it. But I think there was really no great mic-free solution.
Right.
And there was no MADI solution. So I think they answered the broadcaster's needs, and I think they answered the home studio/studio need with the Omni. So they kind of – solve two issues that they weren't solving before.
And there's obviously a market too, because there are companies that sell either interfaces that hook directly to Pro Tools. So obviously people are buying alternative interfaces because they like the sound of them. Or there's a company, is it Black Lion or something like that, that will take a 192 that you already have paid for, charge you thousands of dollars, and do to it what apparently they did while redesigning for the HD interface.
Like so, better clocking.
Better analog circuitry, things like that. And they're also using new A to Ds in the Avid stuff. So presumably it'll be even better. So there is a market. And like Rob was saying, it was, 6 years ago or something?
I think it's even longer than that.
It's been a long time. If they can get that.
Eight years ago. So it was time. Not having heard them, I don't know. But if they're still in the family of 192, it sounds like the source. It's not hyping. It doesn't do anything to it.
Right.
Then I'll be really happy and probably end up with a few.
Wow.
And one of the things that the Avid engineers keep saying, and they've told me directly, is the boxes look very similar to the other HD interfaces. And, it's a different color, but they basically would fit in a rack and look nice with the other HD stuff. But they're basically redesigned from the ground up. So even though the new HDIO looks like a 192, it's actually completely different.
Yeah, it's nothing
inside.
Like it inside.
Now let me ask you a question. How about the fact that on the HD Omni that it's not a FireWire, that it's still based on the TDM cards? Good, bad? You guys, did you expect them to go anyplace other than stay with the TDM? I know a lot of people were kind of not upset, but they were a little disappointed that they're still on the TDM cards and basically still expensive for a lot of people.
I guess they needed the throughput. They're not a dumb company.
No, no. I mean, you would think.
I mean, with the HDIO, absolutely, that's going to stay for their top end systems. Right. I mean, I could see people wishing that there was something like the Omni that would run for an LE system, but who's to say there isn't going to be?
Well, that's
so
true too. You're right.
I mean, I'm assuming that this wasn't their entire plan for the next 8 years.
But if you think about it, AES is around the corner, and this is an AES product. And then the question is, what are they going to show for NAMM? You know, and I think that it's really shown that Avid is moving in interesting areas, and there seems to be movement happening. Well, so the question is, really, what's going to happen for NAMM, and what, if anything, will they introduce in January, February?
Well, you bring up a good point. It's at least they're putting some product out, because the last NAMM, people were having all these big questions about them because they have the biggest non-booth of anybody there. And so it definitely, it definitely makes a statement, says that, hey, we're here and we're ready to
go.
And
it's the first Avid branded stuff they've put out as well. I mean, it's only been software up to now. You know, they changed to splash screen, but this stuff all says Avid. So,
All right. Well, we'll have to see. And then when you get it, Andrew, I'll come over to your place and listen to it.
Yeah, we'll have a listen.
Here we're now. All right. Well, I think the HD Omni, that of all the boxes, that one really kind of intrigues me the most, because the fact you can do all the monitoring and everything, I think that was definitely a good move on their part.
Are the mic pre's or the A to D's on the Omni the same that are in the 192?
No. As far as I've heard, it's the same as the HD. The HDIO.
So it's the HDIO and the
sounds,
Omni.
Yeah.
And the mic pre's in the Omni are comparable to what's in the pre.
Right.
So it should be a pretty great sounding box. Yeah, I mean, it's just fewer channels. It's, 8 in, 8 out with two mic pre's, something like that. But it's got a headphone jack on the front. I mean, for an editing rig, it's great.
It's balanced?
I think so, yeah.
And if you're out on the road or touring, you just need a little small Pro Tool system for board tapes or what have you. That's great.
Just about touring, I was wondering, does anyone use Maddie for live applications?
Yes.
Because you'd think that that would be a great way to be running a huge amount of stuff.
They do. They run redundant Maddie. Yeah. You just run two cables and you have a complete backup.
I mean, the moment you run more than 8 cables, Maddie starts making sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 8 or 16, you know.
And it's very reliable.
Mm-hmm. How much more expensive is it, though?
Well, how much is the Maddie interface?
Well, one Maddie card is 64
how much?
IO. So what happens at that point is if you got one 190, how many 192s would it take to get to 64? And then you have multiples thereof. So if you have 400 or 500 inputs divided by...
That makes sense, it's very cost-effective. Yeah.
And one cool thing about the way this new Maddie box does it is you do have... sample rate conversion on the inputs and the outputs.
Oh, is it real-time sample rate?
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool.
Which is great. So the music guys can come in with 96K or 192. The sound effects guys can come in at 48, and everyone can come in a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. The music guys must come in with 22, actually.
Yeah.
You know what? Most music in Pro Tools, I find, is actually 96. And then they convert it down to 48 for the console, because Dolby is only 48.
Yeah, no, I was being mildly facetious.
Close to the truth.
All right, well, moving on. I want to answer a question Bobby's going to answer the question.
Oh, I am?
Yes, because one of our listeners on our Facebook page.
He has to answer it before you ask it.
Go and hit me.
So why do you feel that way about it?
I didn't know you were taking pictures.
Welcome back.
You can tell me what you're doing.
They just wanted a little bit of clarification on phase and phase problems with cables, how you get it, and some solutions for it.
Okay, so phase inversion, you mean basically like miswired cables or... phase shifting.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's what I thought. I would think it would be
phase. Well, polarity.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. That's the first thing he's going to say in this answer to the question.
I would say. Well, just to clarify what phase is, audio technically, well, look at audio as being AC, alternating current, as being a sine wave. So let's just let's just say, for example, we're running audio down a cable, and it's a pure sine wave of, say, 100 hertz, let's just say. If you can imagine a nice sine wave going down a cable, if you have it... yeah, 100 hertz. Yeah. If you're ever going down the cable, and the cable is wired correctly, when the sine wave's upwards going half cycle, goes up, at the end of the cable, if you was to put a oscilloscope or something on it to be able to read it, it should also represent what you put in at the front of it. So if you put an upward going half cycle or sine wave at the front of a cable and at the end of the cable you have exactly the same, that cable is said to be in phase or correctly polarized. So the positive is going to the positive and the negative is going to the negative. If the only possible chance of it being wrong is 50% chance. So you'd flip the positive and negative around, and then of course the positive going half cycle would actually be inverted and be sent down. So it'd be inverted 180 degrees. They talk in degrees because it's 360 degrees being a cycle. So that's really all it is about, phase flopping or actually inadvertently miswired cables. The problem with it is, of course, though, that when you add signals together that are in phase at the same frequency, let's just say, if you had two sine waves going, one at 100, both at 100 hertz going down a cable, but one was inverted because it's going through a bad cable prior to going here, when you add those two together, you wouldn't get a summing, an additive combination. You'd actually get a negative combination. So it's possible that you actually could cancel the signal right out. So you actually get all sorts of other weird artifacts. So in essence, try and keep your cables in phase, which means to say positive goes to positive and negative goes to negative. There is another more advanced side of it, which is called phase correlation with cables at higher frequencies and different frequencies, and that depends on the inductance and the impedance of the cable, and that depends on the length of the cable and the heat of the cable and the many other things, but I don't think that would be the question. But that is also
That doesn't matter. With normal length cables,
right.
The frequencies that are affected are up in the hundreds of K or even higher,
yeah,
megahertz. So it doesn't actually matter.
It doesn't
matter.
Come into audio worries.
Yeah.
I got you.
Stuff that only Mike's microphone picks up.
Yeah. The biggest thing, though, is because it's kind of a drag that they use the word phase, because it isn't phase, it's polarity.
It is polarity.
Because
yeah.
The actual definition of phase is it's a time delay with audio. So,
oh, I got you.
If you're 180 degrees out of phase, it means you've gone one half of a waveform out. So where it used to be positive, you now have the negative part.
Right.
But for every frequency, that's a different amount of time.
Right.
With a cable that's wired wrong, every single frequency is just flipped over.
It's flipped over.
So that's the polarity, and that's the phase switch in a plug-in or on a console. All it does is electrically change the polarity. Now, the phase problems you get when you have, like, two microphones on a guitar amp or something like that, that's actually to do with the time delay because it's a different distance from the source.
Right.
So
right.
Some frequencies will be out of phase. Some frequencies will be in phase.
Right.
So, and to learn that, you just need to take two microphones and move one of them back and forth near the source, and you'll find a spot where the frequencies you like
come
are adding
come
up.
Play. And a simple yardstick for people playing around with an analog or digital setup, take a signal into two channels, identical signal, doesn't matter, it can be music or sine wave, whatever you want, and make it equally, you know, have the two sliders identically the same volume, and then take one channel and flip the phase of it, meaning flop it 180 degrees. And I should add, make sure the two channels are pan central, zero, right up the center. And you'll actually hear that if you move the sliders, there'll be a spot where they're both at unity or equal volumes, where if you have that flipped 180 degrees, the sound will actually completely disappear.
Completely.
Yeah.
That's
and
how I check. That's like, how I check CD refs from plants that way.
That's exactly right. And that's how you check also when you have an analog console, us old guys, you check to see if you've actually got your panning right and if you've got your left and right balances right. You mono it to make sure you've actually got the same gain structure in your sliders and stuff like that. And you also check correlation between channels, because sometimes you put the same signal down one channel and the same signal down the identical channel, and you put the two sliders up, and it's quite a bit of difference. You go, oh, hang on. So you start to hear not all the frequencies disappear, then you know that's a difference.
So you can use it for, you know, as a positive thing too. It's not just a negative
thing.
Well,
it's what phasers are. It's what comb filtering is. It's
exactly
what,
right.
Yeah, there are tons of effects that are based on it.
And what Andrew spoke to as well is that's what creative miking or people that know how to mic, they use phasing to their advantage. As a yardstick, sound travels at about 1 foot per millisecond, or delay rather. So if you put a microphone at the sound source and another one a foot further back from that same sound source,
right,
the second microphone further back would be approximately a millisecond behind the first microphone. So you know that at that stage, you know what time distance has been spread there.
Right.
So, you know, right there, if you started coupling those two sounds or layering those two sounds, you're going to get a whole bunch of comb filtering, desirable or undesirable. That's up to, that's subjective. But
that's all part of the art of tracking. You know, that's when you know how to do that.
But it's also why, like when I'm recording the guitar amp and people usually stick two microphones right on the amp,
right,
I literally duct tape them together because I can be in a well-lit control room, see the diaphragms, get them lined up, and tape them up and put them on one stand. And that way, someone can kick them, and they both move, and you don't end up – because what happens when it's a tiny change is it's all the high frequencies that get screwed up.
Oh, that's true.
Right.
And that's why when you hear those plugins that are called phasers, some of them are called flanges, which is the incorrect term.
Right.
Well, not. But anyway, the phasers, if you actually put an instrument through it, you will actually start it. Right. Starts to do that, and that's really what it's doing. It's starting to smear the time of the two signals.
But you know what's interesting is –
delay the time of two
signals. We just got finished doing a gun shoot a couple of weeks ago. Think of gun shooting as percussion.
And he wasn't phased.
No. The thing is, we used 38 microphones.
38?
Yep.
No phase problems there.
Yeah, no phase problems there. And we had multi-channel mics, and we were spread out probably over 100 yards. And it's all about that. So what we do is we get all of those tracks back, and we find out what we like, how we're going to process it, and then start phase aligning. And it's not always working within the first mod. Because sometimes they sound a little bit different. And then you're saying, hey, you know what? I want to fatten it up. Not only that, but some of the mics are going to put in the surrounds. Some will be in center. So you start moving around in a multi-channel environment to your benefit. And it's interesting how we then start playing phase games in the editorial process. And you know.
You know what? Also, now, I was just going to say, for most people, I mean, everybody is pretty much using some sort of audio workstation, whether it's Pro Tools or Logic or Cubase or Nuendo or any
right.
Performer.
Let's go about that.
Studio One and all the others.
Yeah.
Studio
Garage
One, sorry.
GarageBand Live.
All of them. But basically, everybody's used to seeing waveforms. And it's very easy. You can play with phase. If you just take the same signal and put it on two different tracks and you see the waveforms on top of each other, try just sliding one of the two tracks, you know, identical source on both. Try sliding one so that when the first track is going up, the second track is going down, you know, like moving it half of a cycle.
Right, right.
And you'll see when you add those signals together, you get silence.
Yeah. And I do it all the time when I'm mixing with badly mic'd drum kits where I'll take the overheads and start moving them forward and backward until all of a sudden the kick and snare sound better. And then you do the same with the room mics. And
right. Yeah.
You can do a ton of work on drum sounds just by moving the tracks around.
Definitely. And when you're recording drums, you're supposed to be aware of all this stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't.
But if you're not, but it's also, I mean, it's literally, it's like moving the microphone in space. So you get a faraway sound, but you can move it earlier, and it's as if you moved it closer to the drum kit in terms of the way the phase works.
I also find by sometimes if you take sub sounds or very low end sounds, a lot of times I'll put them a quarter frame, an eighth of a frame ahead. So when the excursion of the speaker actually hits, I like the way it's playing against the initial sound. So it's already up to boom. It doesn't, you know, automatically go quick. That wave has to propagate to the listener.
That's cool. That's awesome.
So
well,
you can play.
The other thing about doing that that's cool too is sometimes if you have if you need more impact or whatever, by separating the sound by some big chunk of a frame or even multiple frames, it gives each sound its own space. So
right.
You're out of the realm of sounds phasing with each other, and they just end up being two discrete sounds.
Sometimes low end sounds better behind the sound.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes that's good.
Yeah.
But what I was talking about not frames. Frames are like 33 milliseconds approximately.
Right.
We were talking about actual cycles. So
right.
We're talking
right.
like microseconds.
Well, yeah, that's a great point to know that's tiny.
And you don't really hear the sound change much. If somebody wants to set up two digital audio tracks and start scooching it, a sample, not a frame, if you go to the resolution,
the
just nudge it, go by one frame, you start to hear it go, starts to go out of phase, and so it's out of phase, it starts to phase around your head. Very cool effects. I know Andrew does as well in mixing. When you sometimes want to do stereo effects with instruments, make it sound out of the stereo image or something, you apply a delay essentially, Haas effects or something like that, which actually start to make things sound wider. But when you do it with EQ inserted on one of the channels and only do a very small amount, like a millisecond or even a lot less, even just the EQ alone, two different EQs on the same instrument pan left and right, is enough phase difference in the EQ to actually make it sound more stereo.
It's
purely just playing with time.
So if you want to get like the bite of a vocal just coming out from both sides or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's
an example.
Anything. Yeah, but normally like pads or something like that, if you want to do something like whooshy. Squishy.
But you can also do straight polarity stuff. Like if you have a reverb, most reverbs have a lot of mono information to them. So just flip the polarity on one side and all of a sudden you've got a reverb that's only outside the speakers. There's nothing in the middle. And
that's
that can
cool.
be a really cool extra
that's totally
space to put stuff
cool.
in.
And these days, mono compatibility is not an issue so much.
No.
And cut into vinyl is like, what?
That's true.
You know,
right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
What was? I remember a while ago you were testing some gear, API gear, and you were using phase to compare the two.
Yeah, I was comparing original 550As to the reissue 550As, and just I had the snare drum. I think it was a snare, it's probably snare and guitar, going through both EQs, going through two faders on the console that were aligned to within a tenth of a dB. And then just EQ them the same and flip the polarity of one of the channels, and it should disappear, and it didn't. So that means they sound different. Yeah. The 560s and the 525 compressors went away completely. Mm. So those, obviously you use your ears and you listen back and forth, but sometimes it's good to just do a technical thing that you can't. Because more to the point of checking like CD refs from pressing plants, sometimes they screw it up and it sounds bad. But it's hard to check an 80-minute CD against a reference and keep your head straight about what things sounded like. Yeah. You don't want to sit there flipping back and forth every 5 seconds. So you literally load the CD into – I use Pro Tools. That's my DAW of choice.
Yeah.
But I literally load in the ref from mastering. I load in the ref from the plant. I line them up exactly looking at the waveforms, flip the polarity of one of them, and crank the speakers. And if I just sit in the room, and if anything comes out of the speakers, I know the one from the plant screwed up.
Wow.
So I literally listen to nothing for 80 minutes and say it's perfect.
Now, have you ever got one from the plant that was just way off? I mean,
I've gotten some that sounded weird. Yeah, where the top end was weird.
That's a perfect test. I've done lots of listening tests as well, and I remember having a room full of people that we called, evidently could all hear. And I was doing these inversion tests, flipping one side out with optical cables. Not optical cables, testing digital, but we're using optical cables. And we thought we could hear, actually, and everybody said, there's a difference between this and this. But when we phased them and put them together and some are different, there was no sound. So, and it still puzzles me, and I'm thinking...
Well, and it can be, but the thing is, unless you can pick it out in a double-blind test, then probably it's a level difference. There has to be something else that's adding to it.
But exactly, we had it zeroed out and it just disappeared completely when we inverted the phase. But when we listened to individual ones, it was like, well, that one sounds different.
I've had those same kind of experiences. Trippy. It's weird. There's a lot of psychology involved
in
that.
Big time.
Yeah.
And we're all talking now about systems that were perfectly aligned so the level wasn't different.
Right.
But you should also realize that even if something is a tenth of a dB louder than something else,
it sounds better.
It sounds better.
Yeah.
In post-production, they use phasing for something totally different, and that is there's a term called phasing dialogue, where what happens, we'll get a really quickie track from the Avid or Final Cut, basically picture department, and then we have to go through the masters, because a lot of times they'll use what they call a combined track. They'll use a radio mic combined with a boom mic, and a lot of times that's really phasey sounding. That's usually terrible sounding. So we'll make the decisions which mic we want to use, and we'll phase it. So you go in, and in theory, it shouldn't phase at all. It should be dead on. But basically, time-wise, you can't see phase visually. So if your phase, if that dialogue's phasing, including ADR, you want the ADR, if possible, to kind of phase, especially if it's with the same actor and have phase elements to it. Then you know you're in sync. So those two things are in sync, because they'll go, put my OMF tracks up, put it up, put the dialogue tracks up, because it looks out of sync. All of a sudden you put it up, and all of a sudden they start phasing. They're like, okay, we're in sync.
Yeah.
Because you got to remember, we're 40 feet away, and you're talking, that's 40 milliseconds. Yeah.
Wow.
So you look and you go, wait a minute, this seems a little, this could be a frame out.
Is it,
I was just going to say, we just mixed a film at my place not that long ago where the dialogue was recorded just not well, but they had a lav on the main character and then a boom picking up the other characters, but the boom was moving during the scene. And as the boom would move, it was a different distance constantly from the lav, and each mic was picking up each other. And so half of the movie was as you hear the phasing. But we had to use the lav for some things, and we had to use the boom for some other things, and then cutting between them, it was kind of a nightmare.
Here's something, last thing people can play around with at home. Stick up two tracks on your door or whatever it is, mono them. Music tracks of the same signal. So basically take one track and send it to two identical channels and insert an EQ on one of the channels and flip the phase of say the other channel and then play with the EQ. What should happen is that with everything bypassed and one channel out of phase, the sound should disappear 100%. That should be your accuracy test. When you put in the out of phase, when it's out of phase, then plug in the EQ and start playing with the EQ, and you'll find that when you actually cut, you will hear sound. And when you boost, you won't hear sound.
Huh.
And if you go to zero, you won't hear sound. If you cut, you'll hear sound. So you can actually, why I'm telling you that is because it's another way of getting more muscle out of a basic EQ system with only a couple of bands.
Right.
You can use it in a negative inversion.
And you can use it for noise reduction. If I've seen you got a lot of S, or that low end, you can get rid of it.
Tons of things you can do with phase. Well, it's just...
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Multi-band phase. That probably didn't answer the question at all.
No.
You're making an email saying, that's not what I meant at all.
You know what?
And here's one thing, too. And if the polarity on your cables are upside down, just record the entire record backwards and you'll be perfect.
That's what the Beatles did. What happened to them?
You know what? I found the it was Dave Johnson. He was the name of the listener.
And it wasn't about phase at all.
No, it was. No. We went in. It was on show 81. Bobby mentions phase issues between cables and mics. I think I understand phase issues between two mics, recording one source, etc. But I haven't heard of this other problem. Any chance on expanding on his thoughts?
Well, there you go.
We expanded.
Way too much. Thanks for the question, though.
You know what, though? That was awesome because there was a lot of really great tips in there as to, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about phase, you always hear it in a negative context. But phase, it could be your next best friend.
It's like talking about distortion in a negative context. It's a tool. One of the things.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about mixing and remixing and no more phase.
When we come back with the next phase of this.
I think I'm feeling a little out of phase right now.
No, I think we gave them a phase lift.
I gotta go.
We just lost Andy.
And I've been missing this.
Shows.
I can just say.
All right, we'll see you on the other side.
I've never missed a show, you know.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
My head shrunk. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, edit that out.
Welcome. We're back in the podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike.
Put your hand together. Hey! 1, 2, 3.
Is this where we use profanity? I forget when we... No, we have to wait for you to start talking. That's too easy in edit.
All right. See, but I have the power of the edit, Jeremy. Just remember that.
That.
All right, standby. God.
You always say standby, and we always make fun of you for saying standby.
I know.
What else are we going to do?
Well,
don't stand by.
Hey, welcome back to Audio Nowcasts. And before the break, we were talking about phase. And
so the question is, when people listen to podcasts, do they shut it off and then come back to it?
Yeah, what? Do they go to the bathroom? Yeah, like
I just realized, we just take a break, but are they taking a break?
I don't know.
They make a sandwich.
And why do we have a break? Because we none of us go to the bathroom.
No, it's for the B-side.
But they can always do a pause.
You say you got to flip the record.
That's right.
Please pause.
Is there a break?
The break is for us. It is not for them.
Because you had it all together.
But although I will say that during the break, we mentioned Aphex because they're our sponsor and we love all their products.
Oh, I see. So it's a little ad kind of campaign.
We got to give them props.
Props for the cause.
For the cause.
I got it, sir. Yes.
But it's also...
It just shows that none of us have ever listened to the podcast.
That's because you live it. I listen to it 3 times. Jeremy, what do you do during the break?
If I have to go to the bathroom, I do.
Otherwise,
I just let it play.
There you go.
You can have an actual listener.
That's right.
Actual listener response. Feedback.
That's right.
Podcast will travel.
Now you have to announce who Jeremy is.
Well,
because there's a story.
Ah.
He was lurking there in silence, and you've brought him into the daylight.
Well, I was going to do that at the end, but we can introduce Jeremy. Jeremy was as a listener. And he wrote us a really kind letter, and he kind of wanted to come out and bring us coffee. And I told him coffee is not necessary, but he's more than welcome to come out and sit in on the podcast. And so, Jeremy, welcome.
Yay, Jeremy.
You having a good time?
Yeah, it's been good so far. I like it.
And he plays football. He's going to come out and kick around. So that's
he's even like, this isn't what I thought it would be like, you know.
What do you think about live versus what you hear on the iTunes?
It just continues. Like, when you turn it off, all the cheesy jokes and making fun of each other just continues.
I think the biggest thing is he's seen that we all have faces made for radio.
And we all wear a dress. You know, so
the same dress.
He did say it was good so far.
Yeah. It's a big dress.
The night is still young.
All right. Well, Mike, you're
who,
working...
Me? Oh, yes. Hi.
You're working on a really great project. And
they're all great.
And first of all, Mike's been on the podcast a couple times before. He's from RMG Music, and now he's mixing Arms of the Sun, which is the new project from the bass player of Pantera and some other guys. And one thing that I noticed is, Mike, last time on the podcast we talked about when you're a musician, how it can really help you mix, especially thinking about things in a very musical sense. And Mike's a vocalist. And when I listen to his mixes, I can really see how that helps him because it's very musical, all the instruments and the phrasing and things like that. And I wanted to bring him on because for a couple things. Number one, I wanted to ask him how he incorporates his musical background in his mixing and his approach to mixing. Especially on a project like this that you're working on right now.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things, too, and I'm sure everybody here is like, you know, it's still a performance. I think it's easy to forget that sometimes. It's like, you know, you pull the vocal up, and it's like, it's, you know, I like to feel like it's everybody's right there in the room with me. It's like, and when the project's done, it's like you really feel like the band is right there playing. It's a live performance instead of just this sterile, you know, stuff can get so convoluted sometimes. So
Why don't we tell them about how you even got involved with that, with the project that you're working on right now?
Yeah, actually, well, Rex in Brown, who worked with Pantera and has a band called Down also, and then a guy named Lance Harville were working on this, started working on this project together, and it's a really cool kind of a pop rock thing. And they had already had it mixed and was almost finished, and then Rex and I were working on another project he's doing with some guys, and so he said, you know, why don't you throw one of these other mixes together, take one of the tracks that they had done. So I did, and they, you know, felt like it was maybe a better direction, so they had me go back and actually redo the whole record. So, but and that's one thing, too. It's like, you know, this it may be really good or strong, but if it's not – because, you know, they're artists, too. So, you know, one of the things I would sit with Lance as we're working on stuff, and he's like, you know – That's what I was going. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was feeling. And it's a great luxury to be able to sit with the artist and try to convey with what they, you know, instead of like my, you know, you put your own two cents into it, but then let it be so that when they put that thing in, it's like, that's what I was trying to get. That's what I was going for, you know? So that's kind of what this project's been about. And, it's been a lot of fun. They're really, really hilarious guys. So.
Let me ask you, actually, Andrew, do you play instruments, Andrew?
Yeah.
What's your musical background?
Well, I started off on French horn and then switched to trumpet and then realized I wasn't going to be in a rock band. So I started doing what I do now. But, right. I mean, at this point, I play enough keyboards that I end up playing on more things than I should. And Pro Tools and I sometimes play trumpet on things. And I'll play bass. I'll pick up a bass if I have to. I would never perform with a band. I mean, I'm nowhere near at that level. But while working on something, I end up playing harmonium or organ or,
right.
You know, sub bass or just things that it needs. And so I've just found a way to play.
Yeah. But, you know, by the way, one very odd thing. Did you know that I started on French horn, too?
No.
which is very odd.
Wow. We both,
that's, I mean, I was doing piano too, but
not
yeah.
the Italian or the German horn. But
you know, all through. I mean, I was doing piano too, but yeah, through like grade school and high school, it was French horn.
You're not interested in English horn, right? Yeah.
And I've known Rob for 20 years. Yeah, and it's exactly. never come up.
I know, that's very odd.
No, that's interesting because I figured you did because, once again, you know, all really good, it seems like a lot of the good mixers that I know and stuff that I really like, they really approach it in a very, from a very, musical perspective, and you can just tell that they have a sense of phrasing, and they have a sense of timing, and then they kind of know how to make the music sing, you know. And I mean, when you're working on your mix, how does your musical background, you know, affect how you mix?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that there's anything specific that comes up, but it's very much about, I mean, like you were saying, about getting the performance out. I mean, and that's especially, like, I'm working on a couple projects now that I've produced from the beginning, and they're 90% tracked live because that's the way, like, you can perform the verse of the song very well and then perform the chorus of the song very well, but it's how you get from the verse to the chorus, and it's how things build around the vocal and stuff like that. So it's mixing. I try and bring out those things. Like, if the bass player does a little fill because of something that the drummer did, well, crank that up. You know, really showcase all the details that are in there that are part of the performance. So, I mean, while I'm producing, my musical background comes up by saying, right. you know, I think the song should be like this, or I'll play a part or something like that. But mixing, it's more about listening like a musician, I guess.
Yeah.
It's more like knowing where you want the emotion to come from, and because I'm a musician, I can figure out where to find it or something like that. I don't know if that makes any sense.
See, I was going to say also, as a French horn player, I've seen Andrew Mixon. The first thing he does is shove his hand into the console.
Yeah.
He does that a lot.
That's a retail. Sorry, our first French horn joke.
That's a very old French horn joke.
You know, because I know I make a big deal about being musical when you mix, but I've come across, especially in post-production, and I don't know if Scott's had the same experience, but you see a lot of technical mixers that come up on the post side that have the head knowledge, but since they're not musicians, they just don't get that sense, that beat, that pacing, that timing.
Yeah. It's got to have a rhythm.
You've probably worked with mixers like that.
Because I do editing and mixing, which is kind of like the musician and the mixer, everything has to have a rhythm when people talk, when there's music, when you're going up to a scene and all of a sudden the big action hits. Watching a picture cutter cut, it's really weird when a picture cutter cuts without rhythm. But sometimes you use that as a tool. When I did a lot of Oliver Stone work, what was great was we start messing with the rhythm of the cuts to throw the audience off, because if it's out of rhythm, people find it very disturbing. Right. If people talk out of rhythm, it's very disturbing. It goes against the grain. So if you get actors that are going, I mean, when people act, there's a rhythm. There's rhythms all along the way, and when you do a cut or you lean into a cut, all of that is rhythm-based. So to me, it's all music. And I look at low, you know, like we'll be doing a mix or design, and I'll say, you know what, we don't need low notes. All it is all really high, and it flattens out and stays within this handful of frequencies. So it's nice to, you know, occasionally there's like a low beat that kind of accentuates and different hit points within a project, especially with an action.
Right. So, you know, I want to stress this because I think, once again, I get a lot of listeners that ask questions about becoming a better mixer, and they want to, you know, get to the next level. And one of the things I suggest is, you know, pick up a musical instrument, whether it's guitar, keys, or something. Just kind of start understanding the whole language of music, and I think it's only going to help you out as you become a mixer and as you get more proficient. And also, you can speak the language of the musicians that are there.
I think listen to better mixes. I mean, I agree with you. Certainly nice to be musical, but you can be a really good mixer and not be musical.
No, that's true, too.
I mean, I really can. You just got to have a feel for what's going on, and that's gotten, I think, acquired by listening to really good mixes. And there's not that many anymore in the world, and not many great records getting mixed because everything gets squashed to hell. But if you start listening to some of the really great older records, I hate to say, but there's some really good, hard, well-recorded, well-mixed older records that are very musical. You'll learn a lot about just dynamics and interplay, as Andrew said, about little bits and twiddly bits that go on in a mix.
I've been doing a lot of mixing lately, and I'm dealing a lot of times, even on my small little rig sessions,
right,
with probably about 600 tracks. That's my small sessions.
Holy smokes.
And, but what's important is you learn mixing and you can find out where the volumes are, and that's great. But when you have so many elements, you then have to start understanding the concept of masking, where you put a couple different sounds together and they all sound really good by themselves. But when you can start combining them, certain sounds start masking other sounds. So then it becomes, especially with automated EQ, not just stagnated, but dynamic, unmasking and getting rid of certain frequencies so you can allow other sounds to breathe and come to life. And it's really trying to find the detail in that, because I'm a huge detail oriented. And I'm lucky enough a lot of times when I do my post mixes, not as much for film, but a lot for gaming, that I'm by myself. I keep my own hours. And I just go in there, and I would spend probably more time than I should. And I'll start just – I keep making layer and layer and just keep making passes on it and shaving away. I find it's very not additive but subtractive,
right,
through the whole process.
Right.
We should also point out that mixing for post and for music are very, very different animals.
That's true.
The technical side is, but I think a huge point is that – especially music or sound for post or records, you're doing nothing but trying to create an emotion with what comes out of the speakers.
Yeah.
And whether it's terrifying somebody in a movie by throwing off the rhythm, or whether it's terrifying somebody in the middle of a song with a scream that starts really, really quietly and you don't even know what it is, and then it gets huge as the chorus hits or whatever it is, that's all you're trying to do. So there's a huge technical side to it, and on the technical side, post and music couldn't be any more different, I don't think.
But do you realize that a lot of times in post, I'm given 64 tracks of music, and they're not all mixed down.
Yeah.
I've got, here's low-end instruments and melodies, I've got to add reverbs, and a lot of times I'm given stereo. So I've got to then create a 5.1, you know, and I spend a half a day to a day just doing the music, trying to make it punchy, trying to make it sing a little bit better.
I bet the mix is glad to hear that.
Well,
I'll give you a two-track.
One other thing that I wanted to talk to Mike about is what was unique about this situation, and I wanted to open up for everybody here because I think we've probably all been in the situation, is he took over the project from another mixer. And there was definitely some, you know, politics, and, you know, you got to be careful how you do that. And I just wanted... I just wanted Mike to to talk a little bit about the challenge of getting something that's already been mixed, and now he has all the tracks, and now he has to remix it. And actually, a couple things that I know he did is he reamped a lot of stuff. He ran stuff through the 7600 channel strips on the drums and things like that. I mean, why don't you talk about how you kind of, you know, kicked it up a notch.
Yeah, well, I think after talking with the artist guys about, like, the kind of direction they were going for and what I heard, I was like, okay, well, I think if we, you know, took this direction, steer over here, we might be able to accomplish more what you guys are, you know, that organic, you know, somewhere in between super slick polished and completely, you know, tree hugger, and somewhere in the middle of all that. And, like, you know, it was just what just they were kind of wanting to do. So I said, you know, we could try this, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, okay, let's do it. So we start kind of heading down that direction. And again, if it impacts those guys, it's like when you start seeing and hearing them going, that's yes, you know, and they get the goosebumps. You're like, okay, then that's, you know, whether the world ends up liking it or not, you know, if the creators of it really feel like you hit what I was trying to go for, then that's the best you can do, you know. So, and then you hope the public, obviously, if the songs are strong or whatnot, likes it. But yeah, as far as the re-recording thing, I mean, if it's done a certain way and they're like, but I just wish it was blah, 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 blah. I mean, maybe sometimes it's, you know, EQ, whatever, compression, whatnot, slapping on there and things happen. But sometimes it's like take the signal pad, you know, pad whatever pre you want to use and just start dinking around and seeing what you come up with, you know, because as long as it's in phase, the only thing is, you know, if you don't like it, then you don't like it.
The original mixer didn't have a problem with you taking over the project. He was very excited to play the band. And,
yeah, because it wasn't like, oh, great, this stuff really stunk. It was just like, let's maybe take it a different direction. That's all, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, I've been in your shoes on both sides of the fence, having stuff mixed that I've recorded. And sometimes when you've actually tracked the band and you've been the producer or whatever it is in the studio for 4 months tracking the guys, right, you really do see, you don't see the wood for the trees, but you've got the A&R guy saying, well, we need this record in 3 weeks. Can you get it mixed? And you just, you really do need a break, but there's not that luxury of the time. And sometimes it's a lot easier for somebody with a fresh air to come in. They'll do a better job. They'll just hear it differently from you and they won't put up all the mics or they'll just, and it's really a breath of fresh air for both sides of that story. You know, it really is to have somebody come in and say, okay, or even, you know, just take it off and do a good job. And likewise, when you get somebody else's tracks, well, they're not actually getting together. Sometimes you go, well, you don't have to have this on or maybe this or exactly as Mike's saying, it's the same thing. It really is. When you've been working with something such a long time, sometimes it's really nice to have somebody with fresh ears.
And if it's a rock record, you just say, look, it's got to have some ukulele to kick it up a notch. I'm still fighting with them on that one, but it's going to happen eventually. So.
Hey, why don't you explain what you did with the drums? Because I thought that was kind of cool. And also very labor intensive, the fact that you had to send every single track of drums to the 76.
Yeah, well, yeah. Actually, I went back and actually re-recorded all the drums. So I was like, you know, they weren't that crazy about, you know, and there was a lot of triggering stuff that had been going on, you know, prior. I was like, well, let's see if we can start from scratch and build something out of what's, you know, recorded, and what we can do with that. So I actually re-recorded everything, you know. And
it, what 7600?
All API stuff. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he went, you know, when you think re-record, you think sending it through a console or something. He actually only had a single channel of API.
Of the API 7600,
so he did
yeah.
every track one at a time.
In real time.
Yeah, yeah.
All the way through.
But again is the fresh ears coming from a different perspective and looking at that detail to get the sound that they really loved.
I just thought that was the fact that, you know, you didn't screw up with all those drum tracks. I mean.
Well, not to say that they're not screwed up. But,
yeah. Andrew, you ever been in that situation, taking over a project from somebody, either?
Yeah, well, I mean, all the time. Whenever I'm mixing, if it's something I haven't tracked, yeah, it happens all the time.
How about stuff that's already been mixed and they just want a different perspective?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it's amicable and sometimes it's not. And you just hope that if it isn't, that you don't have to get in the middle of it. Because usually what ends up happening is the person who was doing it still has the hard drives. And then and you get the stuff and they've already found out why you're getting it and there's stuff missing or, you know. So it can be kind of a drag that way. But, I mean, the drag is that, first of all, when that happens, they're out of money. I mean, I don't know what your deal was, but they've already mixed the record, so they've already spent the mix budget. So therefore, you're doing it for less money than you should. But it's also, there's something inherently not right yet. And you hope it's just the mixing, but it usually isn't. It's usually, like what you're saying, it's the way the stuff was tracked in the first place. So now, you've got to kind of go re-record, but they love the performances and the songs are done. They don't want to redo everything, so you have to make do with what's there, and it makes it really, really difficult.
Although I do know you did re-record some of the vocals and stuff, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, a lot of the vocals, uh-huh.
But, yeah, that to me that just seems like a really – I know I've – well, let me step that back because I don't want to give anybody up, but I have redone TV shows that – have come my way where the producers have been less than happy with the previous mixes.
Okay. I have done things to stuff on projects that needed things done.
Well, this is a project that I've been on and off for the last year, I think. And if anyone can figure it out, great. But we're coming back to it, by the way. And it will have been touched 4 different mix teams. Oh. Not because they didn't like the other mix team. The other people weren't available anymore.
Right.
So they're like, oh, so it's available? No. They're available? No. So we've had 4 different personalities. And as being the sound soup, it's been really crazy because everybody wants to put their stamp on it.
Right.
And but it's also fascinating because I'm seeing 4 different personalities to a film occurring sonically, and it's like, wow. And some I really dig, and other ones, not so much. but and then you try to get back to where you thought it should go.
Right.
But everyone has a very distinct opinion on it, and it's been quite the journey.
You know, it's funny. We're all kind of dancing around, but it's because of the tremendous amount of politics when you get into the situation of
it can
touching.
Be, there was a pretty big record at one point that they were, I think, basically done tracking. And something happened, and I got a call like, hey, can you come in and do a few overdubs to do and just check out the tracks and make sure everything's cool? And you get in there, and immediately they had to re-record the record. It was not going to work. And you spend a whole week kind of leading up to, well, we could try this and try. And, yeah. And finally, you know, they did, and they were really happy at the end of the day with that decision. But that's a pretty major thing.
Yeah.
Because even if they sort of know deep down that what they have isn't what they want, they think it can be salvaged,
right,
you know.
Right, right.
So there's a way to do it, right, where we're not doing this from scratch, and you know.
You have to be diplomatic, so you say things like, well, as long as we fade the song after about 5 seconds, yeah, then we won't hear any of the bad parts.
Yeah, if you never mix this record, it'll be fine.
It'll be excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it's so funny you say that. Like 2 weeks ago, I was working on this network show, and I got this frantic phone call from the producer, calls me up and says, I need you to play this because I need to see if we can salvage this. So he brings me some audio, and it was severely overmodulated. I mean, horribly overmodulated. It was crunchy, crunchy, crunchy. And so I said, there is not a thing I can do with this. I can't fix this.
Phasing.
And then I asked him what camera he used, and he said, well, we recorded on a 5D, which is a DSLR camera. And I said, well, you know, there's probably audio on your QuickTime, and it's not going to be great, but it's going to be better than the audio that's on the tracks. And so sure enough, there was audio there, really ambience. Well, to make a long story short, he actually brought in the production mixer, came in, and basically, you know, was going to call him on the carpet, and I was in the room with him.
In front of you?
Yes, and I'm like, man, I didn't want to, because we all make mistakes, you know, I don't know what the situation was at the time. But what was funny was, when I played the tracks, he couldn't hear anything wrong with them.
Wow.
I'm like, he goes, well, no, these are okay, you can fix this. I'm like, oh, you're kidding me.
Wow.
And I found out what the problem was right then and there. It was the production mixer not hearing the overmodulation, but it was really uncomfortable. And it was just, mm-hmm, it's really hard to, like, you know, we're dancing around this because it's, you know, when you go into other people's territory, when you go into someone else's mix, it's like you're going to their part of the woods and they've already peed on all the trees.
I think it's just hard, you know, for human beings. I mean, in my instance, in this particular case, everybody was incredibly professional, and it wasn't, you know, a huge, oh no, World War III. It worked out really well. But, you know, you're dealing with human beings, and people have emotions and feelings, and no one wants to, you know, whether you say it in a nice way or not, like, you know, Andrew was saying, like, even though kind of the elephant in the room is that it probably might need to get redone, it's like, you know, you want to be encouraging and, you know, don't want to tell somebody, hey, this stuff is just, you know, whatever, it doesn't work or it stinks. So it's a tough thing, you know. But you got to also, whatever industry you work in, you got to be grown up and professional enough to say if somebody wants to take something a different direction, then, you know, so be it. You know, it's not the end of the world. So
yeah, and I guess in this industry, it's like you just don't want to be labeled that guy, you know. It's just people, there's a lot of gossip and people talk and things like that. And you just, I don't know, it seems like there's a fine line between, you know, being a jerk and telling the truth, you know. What do you, mm-hmm, think, Rob?
I think that most people have had both experiences where something's been taken away from you or you've taken something away from somebody else. Most professional people are pretty cool about it because they realize you don't want to make a big stink about someone else having screwed up because you wouldn't want people to make the same kind of stink about you.
I think instead of it sometimes a negative, it's always sometimes there's people that stand out. Like I know in post, one of the biggest problems we have with music and sound effects is actually dialogue. And what I mean by dialogue is you got to remember you've got what we call air tone in the background through a whole mix.
Right.
Now, if you got traffic and stuff, some dialogue mixers, the dialogue's round, it's full, and there's not a lot of crap in the background. So all of a sudden, you put the music in, you put the sound effects in, everything has its place. It's clean. It just really sounds like an amazing mix. Other people, I don't know what they're doing. It sounds like they got a mic about 25 yards out, and the background noise is way too high, and they didn't tell everyone to shut up. And all of a sudden, you know, you'll sit there, and they'll go like, wow, you know, can you bring the Bee Gees back? I can't hear the music. I'm like, that's your dialogue. Now, you can ADR it, but sometimes they don't like the ADR. And
right.
There's a lot of issues you can play with, but it's always interesting, and a lot of times, more than saying who didn't do a good job, because it's kind of self-evident, it's a lot of times it's when you hear somebody do something that's, wow, yeah. This stuff's, who is this guy? And how do we keep this guy busy? And I find there's a lot of that. When somebody stands out and does something really great,
yeah.
All of a sudden, it's not like, nobody really wants to spend time messing, you know, bringing somebody down. But boy, if you do a good job, everybody wants to lift you up.
And by the way, especially on like smaller and independent films, for some reason, the live recordist is a place where things seem to always fall apart. It's like they don't realize how important it is to have somebody great. I mean, that is the one step that can really make or break your film.
I mean, a TV show that I didn't do, but I've just been very happy with, was HBO The Pacific.
Right.
I mean, Dennis Sands did the mix music, and I just said, I hear every instrument, I hear every dialogue, I hear depth of field. You guys just, I mean, I don't care if it's TV or movies, you guys knocked it out of the ballpark. Because it had subs, it was just a wonderful, wonderful mix with clarity. And if anyone gets a chance to hear it, I think it's, for post-production,
right.
It's one of those things that have done very well.
And Dennis Sands is a nice guy, he's the guy that taught me how to get movie sound.
Yeah, Mike Minkler, who's amazing also, was the re-recording mixer, Dennis Sands. And it's just, they did it right, because all of a sudden, the military will be sitting around, and all of a sudden, incoming will hit. The subs will, all the way to 11, scare the crap out of you. And then all of a sudden, it's very emotional. But a lot of times when you get fighting with guns and music and big choirs going, it's really easy to become mush.
Right.
And everything was so easy to listen to, and it just was a great example of everybody doing their job really well.
It also sounded real, because I watched that whole series, and I just, it's weird, even though none of it was real, it sounded like this is how I would picture it to sound, you know. Sometimes when you get all the choir and the big, you know, score and stuff like that, it kind of pulls you out of it. But I found that it really sucked me in. And
the dialogue, you never sat there and went, whoa, wait a minute, lost those lines.
Yeah.
You know, because it got too quiet, or it was just very well done.
So any advice if you have to pick up a mix from somebody else that started it? Anybody have any good words of wisdom for anybody out there?
I can tell you a couple of mistakes I've made. With Andrew. Andrew also spoke to it too, where you actually say, it's a pile of crap and this can't be saved, and you know it, but you stand in there and you say, oh, okay, and everybody's encouraging you to do your best, and then you end up not getting any better, really, because you're batting with a weak thing. It's best as soon as possible, say, listen, this needs to be done, otherwise I don't think it's going to be much better.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, that really is absolutely true.
Yeah, because otherwise you'll end up looking worse.
Yeah.
And not being the savior. You'll be like, oh, he sucked too.
No. I just turned on a project like that where there was an indie film which would be coming out. Actually, the film was really good, shot really inexpensively, big actors, but it was made for no money. And they said, hey, look, we just got into the Toronto Film Festival. Could you take a look at this and see what you can do? We have 2 weeks. And I went, okay. Listen to it. And I'm like, am I listening to the old maths? What am I listening to? Well, you're listening to our last mix. I'm like, wow, okay. And then that combined with no money, because I thought I can go to a small army and do something, but they had no money for it. And it was one of those things that I had to step away, because there's no... Yeah.
It's just unwinnable. An unwinnable war.
You sit there and you go, I will work pretty much 24-7 for 2 weeks, no money, and I'm not sure I can... I mean, the dialogue... Because I said, oh, do you have AB mics? Is this a room? Because somebody sounded like they were miking it literally across the room.
Wow.
On one cut, and the next cut was close mic'd. I said, do you have any alternates? What do you have? And they're like, I don't know. We did innuendo, and we're Pro Tools, and we're not really sure. And I just sat there and went, oh, this
you gets know, in a way, unfortunately, it's not being nasty, but so many people don't have their abilities together. I'll be nice about it.
Right.
And they do projects, music, movies, whatever it is. Yep. And then they come to the end and say, okay, can you make it sound really good? And it's like, no, we can't, because you didn't know what you're doing in the first place. And quite frankly, you deserve to fail. I mean, I hate to be rude, but, you know, people should start actually say, you know something, we do need a good recording guy.
Right.
We actually do need a good actor. We do need a good musician to play things. Instead of like doing, just piling junk together and expecting somebody to come up and make it sound good, and then they get all the glories. Like,
so honesty, I mean, unfortunately, is, well, honesty is truly the best policy. And that's
you know, absolutely. I mean, not everybody wants to hear the truth, but you will actually look. It'll backfire on you if you try and be the yes person. I mean, you really will.
Rob, you ever walked away from something?
Oh yeah, and a lot more recently than in the old days. In the old days, I used to agree to a lot of things just to get the experience and to be involved and to try to help out and everything else. But the basic bottom line is, if you have a studio or gear or skills or anything,
they'll find you.
They'll find you, and they're going to ask for favors. And I've said this before, if you agree to do a bunch of favors, then you get thought of as the guy who does favors. And then right. when they have real money, they go someplace else. And a lot of times, your time would be better spent sitting and learning your gear rather than working on a unwinnable project. I mean, there are plenty gigs that are worth saying no to.
Wow.
And you can work for free any day of your life.
Yeah.
I found that out.
Well, it's good when you're young and you learn the dynamics, because like, you're going to make mistakes, and they're going to make mistakes, and everyone's making mistakes, and the product's at the level where you're at.
Right.
But as you get further down, it's interesting that I find the cheaper projects, the smaller projects, are the hardest.
Oh,
the ones who have no money.
Yeah.
And the guys have all the money. Wow, everybody's doing their job well. And it's a whole lot easier.
But I've said this before, too. The reason those projects don't have money and those producers don't have money is because they're not great at what they do.
Yet.
And yet. Well, maybe yet, or maybe just they're not great at what they do. And so they're working on projects that don't have budgets because no one would trust them with a huge budget, because they don't deserve to be trusted with a huge
budget.
So
I have a question. So then at what age can you no longer say, well, I'm still young and...
You know what? It gets.
Is it 32?
Son of age, how long have you been doing that?
Oh, okay.
Well, hey.
That's a tough question.
I know.
We got that's the next podcast.
That
when do you
deep.
Age out? Age, and how do you hide it? Hey, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh,
and,
thank you very much. For
and I heard
me.
Those mixes that he's doing. And
there really were some booing.
Is it, really done? Is it done already?
Almost, yeah.
Nice.
I've got three more to go. So.
And, so be on the lookout for Arms of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And do they know when they want to release it? Is it going to be a winter thing? Or
I'm not sure yet. I don't think they have a specific date yet.
All right.
So.
Well, I'll keep everybody posted.
The next quarter or so, I think. So.
All right. And Andy, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for all the tags.
You're welcome.
And there'll be more.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me at the table with all these great guys.
Oh, no.
Very interesting.
And one awesome guy.
And number one guy here.
Oh, come on.
She was
stop.
Looking at me when she said, well, he's a great guy. So I am you too, honey.
And Andrew, it's good to see you back.
Thanks. Good to be seen.
It's good to have you back, and just with your big intimidating voice that you have on the mic,
which sounds horrible in my headphones.
You know what?
So I got to tell you,
I don't know. It's the magic mic, man.
That is the magic mic.
It must
mic.
Be. Well, who sits here when I'm not here?
Different people.
Yeah, and how do they sound?
Not as good as
not
you.
Not as good.
There you go.
No,
so it's not the mic.
Actually, Mike had a statue made of you, an exact likeness that sits in the chair.
All right, excellent.
We convolved your voice, and whoever talks just sounds like you.
But now you're gonna have to get that beard.
That's right.
But everybody
else, if you don't want to look old, don't grow a beard.
Actually,
turns out that's gray real early.
Yeah, good point.
Everybody else who sits in your chair actually has to be re-recorded. You're the only one that doesn't.
Right.
And Bobby, it's good to have you back.
It's lovely to be back, mate. Thank you very much. Been very missed you guys. Thank you.
Are you working on anything?
Anything? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Actually, I'm doing a couple of things. Yeah, got a couple of things on the burner.
But nothing you can talk about.
No, I can talk about it. I can tell you what I'm doing. I can't tell you specifically what it is. I'm a couple of things. Three big projects. Three nice projects. One of them is, one is a sample library. So I'll have that actually. Rob popped over yesterday and had a listen to a couple little silly the day before and a little zing.
It's quite awesome.
No, he's sweet, but it's going to be fun. Oh. And it's a friend of mine, he has a company called Audio Bro, and he had a, he's got a thing called LASS, which is a string library. Huh. We started it together at my place, and he's gone on to do it. And now he said, hey, let's do the next one together. So we're doing the next one together.
Great.
That's one of the things I'm doing.
And when's that going to be coming out?
Most probably Namage.
I gotcha.
Yep.
All platforms or Kontakt?
Kontakt.
Great.
Kontakt, yeah.
We'll look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Awesome.
That's a lot of work, too. I will just chime in and say, I can't believe what a chunky has bitten off here. Yeah, it is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Hey, whatever.
But I've got to go. See you.
Well, we'll accommodate you. It's good to have you back.
I missed you. I was in South Africa watching World Cup soccer. That's why I wasn't here. Tell everybody. That's why I wasn't here. Not because I didn't love you anymore.
I know. Scott, you working on anything fun and exciting?
I was doing audio research in Hawaii. Yeah. I was on vacation. Finished.
Yeah. You need a vacation, man.
I've had 2.5 year run. Almost straight, and finished Charlie St. Cloud, and it's been actually 10 years since I've had a real vacation. Wow. So we took 2 weeks, and my son, my wife, and I, and we, to be honest, I left my phone in the safe, didn't bring a computer, and just shut off from news, shut off from people, went underwater, went above the water, just did anything but. Wow. And
I would be crying in my hotel room if I didn't.
Yes, you would. You know what? To be honest, you get to the point of just like, you know, everyone came back and went, wow, because I was more gray, my eyes were puffy, and I just, you know, you get tired after a while. And
you look good right now. You look all happy and all colored.
And you know what's great is I had a project. We finished Fable 3, and that little cinematic's online now. You can see it. As well as I start Epic Mickey in about a week.
Wow.
That's also online, one of the openings that they've announced. I can actually say these things. But you know what's great? I get this rare opportunity last week and this week. All I'm doing is shedding gear. I'm going through stuff, the stuff I haven't played with in a long time. I want to investigate. Kontakt's one of them.
Oh, really?
I'm just going through it. You know, because sometimes, you know, you buy something, use it, and then you don't need it for a couple of years or a year. And then I went, God, I haven't used this or piece of gear, outboard gear, and whatever.
Give it to me.
I have to tell you quickly. I told you guys, but nobody knows. I bought a 24 truck, 827 with SR. All right. It's very nice.
So if you've got any old gear, bring it on round.
Well, actually,
I'll take it.
I've been very obsessed actually with one thing, and then I'll pass on. But I've been getting back into my
guitar.
Don't pass out. I've been actually getting back onto my guitar. Guitar's been a big thing for me, and I've been very inspired. And I've been looking at amps. Boutique vintage amps. So I've been going, like, I've spent hours and hours on Facebook and been to every boutique store in LA, and you know, but I found something called the Bifractal. Bifractal Audio, something called the Axe FX, which is a high end modeling system for guitar, which is off the charts amazing, and and it reproduces Dumbles and AC30s and different amp combos with mics, and they've A-B'd it, and I've had a bunch of friends that are guitar freaks listen and A-B it, and they're very impressed with maybe a Bogner speaker or something, and it's really kind of cool. So I've been getting back into that and just loving it. I'm done.
Lovely.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Andrew.
Yes.
How you
Mike.
Doing?
Hi, Mike.
What have you been doing?
I've been making records, which is good. I've been very lucky. I've been working a lot. Obviously, the money side of the industry's imploded, but doing some great music.
Money? Did you ever get?
I used to get paid. Yeah, it's this thing you trade for
money.
Goods.
any titles that are out
yeah,
right
yeah.
now?
Yeah, well, I did a lot of work on the Gogo Bordello record that's out. Which was a lot of fun, but we're in the middle of mixing right now an album I produced for the Duke Spirit, a great band from London, and a band Faves from Switzerland that we tracked all live in 2 weeks in Wales, a studio in Wales, which was amazing, and I'll be mixing that in a little bit. So, yeah, it's good, just a lot of music.
Lovely, it's great.
Great.
And you were in Switzerland, right?
I went to Switzerland, in January to meet with the band last year.
Nice.
And then, yeah.
Wow, that's great. Well, we look forward to you coming back.
We should talk about tracking, because I'd love to find out where'd you track, why'd you track, what places you tracked at, what, you know.
Why? That'll be a good one.
why you chose one location from another?
Well, okay, really briefly, I recorded the Swiss band. We recorded at a studio called Mono Valley, which is literally a quarter mile away from Rockfield Studios in Wales, which is right near Wales, near Monmouth, just over the border from England. And the reason I chose it was because I mixed a record there a few years ago because it's exactly a one-hour drive to my mother-in-law's farm. And I was commuting to the studio to work, and it's the only studio I could find that had a good console to mix on. So, but it's also a residential studio with an amazing live room, and the Swiss band, there's six people in the band, and we track the record live, period. The only overdubs are a little bit of percussion, maybe a guitar solo, a lot of the vocals that we've used, live vocals on some of the songs. So cut live, as takes, everybody playing, done. So we needed a big room to do it in. So that's where and when. But the why was because it wasn't recorded yet. So we had to
Why you chose because it was supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, doing the Swiss band, I never left the control room. I stayed at the studio, left the house, I think, twice to get on a bicycle and go down the lane. Like, and take 5 minutes. We made it to the pub one time.
It's true, then, that mother-in-laws do control almost all aspects of our lives.
No, she was actually glad to see me. It's good. No, she's very, very sweet.
He knows his wife listens.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I've actually met his mother-in-law. She's very sweet. She's very
nice. Yeah, she loves Rob's house. She can't believe that Rob's house exists. She just loves it.
I can't either.
Well, speaking of Rob,
yes.
What are you working on? Did you notice we did things a little different?
It was totally awesome.
We mixed it up here.
I know. Totally freaky. Well, show number 90, you know, we're spreading our wings.
That's right.
What am I doing? Well, a few things I've already done. The Old Navy campaign I talked about last time, that's still on the air and running. So that's the first commercial campaign I've written music for in years, but that's on the air. I've seen it a bunch of times, and there are more coming up. We finally have a really good salesperson, so the commercial work has started to come in. That was a cool thing. Just finished up a blues album that I'm going to be able to talk about probably by next podcast because we want people to start checking it out. It's going to be pretty cool, and there are videos that go with it. It's a pretty big production, but really great musicianship. Not a lot of studio tricks, just a lot of work because they're complicated arrangements and stuff. The other thing that I mentioned a little bit at the last podcast, and I can't go into too much detail because there isn't much yet, but I ended up going up to Google headquarters in Mountain View.
Wow.
And I'm going to be doing some consulting with them, and it's kind of forming this relationship, and it's really cool. But I just have to say, I've never been to a place like that. I mean, I've been to some other campuses. I've been to Microsoft. I was at Silicon Graphics back in their heyday. Yeah. That's actually interesting. The Google campus used to be the Silicon Graphics campus. It's one and the same. They took it over.
Wow.
But I've just never seen an operation like the Google campus. And there are all kinds of specials you can see online. You know, there are YouTube videos talking about the food and the amenities that they give to the people who work there and stuff. You should just check it out. I can't even describe it. I mean, just one quick statistic. There are over 300 people there just on the food staff. And you believe it once you're there. Once you're there, you say, really? Only 300? I mean, it's like a different planet.
Was it like a cruise ship?
It's like, you know what? It's like many, many, many cruise ships.
Wow.
Basically. It's just unbelievable. Wow. And I don't think I've ever seen that many smart people in one place in my life.
Wow.
I mean, everybody just looks like
they're
brilliant. Except for here. Except they have like, you know, 20,000 of them or something.
Yeah.
No, but it was a really cool experience. I'm excited to be doing stuff with them and looking forward to the next trip. And then the other thing coming up in a couple days, we're going to be tracking a few songs for an artist named Kevin McCourt, who I've done things with in the past, but we're going to be using just the greatest rhythm section. Jerry Brown on drums, Nate Watts on bass, a lot of people who've played with Stevie, and some real all-star guests. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're only doing two songs, but it should be a lot of fun.
That sounds cool.
So lots going on.
Sounds exciting.
What are you doing, Mike?
Yeah, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Mike.
just doing a lot of radio commercials for Cons Electronics, which is like a Best Buy over in the Texas area. And been doing some TV spots.
going to be directing a music video, and that's about it, really. Nice. So just that and keeping the podcast up and running.
Yeah.
And really quick, I just want to tell everybody, first of all, I want to say thank you because our downloads are just going through the roof. So people are talking and people are downloading, or one guy is talking. And, and if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And it does work because Jeremy is a good example, right?
Yeah.
Right. How fast was that response after you emailed me?
It was actually pretty fast, but I was surprised because I sent him like an essay, so they got back to me pretty quickly.
Yeah. See, I've got that. I've got the spam filtered all worked out, so I get the emails quick, and I'll respond.
So you send an email, you end up on the couch.
That's how it works. And that's why it's called the casting couch.
But I do want to mention a few things. Number one, that this is show number 90, and we're going to hit show 100 somewhere around NAMM. So we're thinking about doing something big around the NAMM. So just kind of want to let people
we're
know.
We're talking from NAMM!
No. One of the things we're talking about, just to let people in, we're thinking about doing a live show around NAMM, and we're going to open it up to the public. So
that'd be great.
So there'll be seven of us then.
There'll be 14. There'll be seven on the panel and the seven people that are going to be in the audience.
All right.
So I just want to mention that because it looks like those plans are kind of coming together.
I could offer you a booth, maybe.
Well, no, we're not going to do it like in NAMM because we want.
We should just do it at Rob's house. The same thing.
We want people to come, so we're thinking about doing it at a hotel in a hotel ballroom.
In a bar and NAMM. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
exactly
what I'm talking about.
Those are empty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They're all available.
but we're working on the details right now, so that'll be kind of cool. And you know, it's if you go to our Facebook, we've got a good little community going, and that's really a great place for people to ask questions and to get in touch with us. And like the gentleman that asked about the, you know, he was losing his hearing on one side and about the mono monitoring and things like that. So
will we get to that next time?
Oh, I've actually the replies that I've got, I've already posted them on the Facebook. So.
Okay, maybe we'll just talk about it a little next time because that was interesting.
Yeah, we'll definitely say something. And everybody had some really good responses, and some were a little longer and some were shorter. But
some were very short.
But profound. But no, that was really good. So if you want to know what we're talking about, go to our Facebook page. And also we now have over 100 likes, which is nice. Because when we were like in the 90s, I was just feeling really bummed.
So thank you, number 100.
That's right.
You're welcome.
So anyhow, just once again, if you want to contact us, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Jeremy. Thanks for coming and hanging out, man.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And afterwards we'll talk, you know. I just want to one other thing, want to remind people that if you do want to learn guitar, we have a great deal for people from the guys over at Play Guitar Like Magic, where if you enter Audio Nowcast, you get 50% off.
Wow.
Just for
Scott's
us.
Scott's going over there.
I'm going. I'm going. Bye.
It's a great series, especially.
Of course, they'll only teach you to play a 3-string, though.
Now, ukulele, 4-string.
It's a great series. I really recommend people going to the website, and all that info and all the links are going to be on our website. But that's Play Guitar Like Magic. All right. From myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.